From the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanthi Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have a talk by Sri Vinay Kumar, trustee of the Sri Sathya Sai Trust Karnataka, convener of the Brindavan Ashram Management Committee and a member of the National Youth Committee of the Sri Sathya Sai Seva Organization, India. In the year 2006, Sri Vinay Kumar was fortunate to be handpicked by Bhagwan as the chief organizer of the first Atirudra Mahayajna, which was held at Prashanthi Nilayam. And in this speech, he talks of his personal experiences with Bhagwan and also about the story of how the first Atirudra Mahayajna came into fruition and the lessons he learned therefrom. This is a 1 hour 15 minute talk, after which we will have some powerful Shiva bhajans followed by the live Telugu segment Sri Sathya Sai Divya Sandesha Jhari at 3:30 PM. Stay tuned.
Sarva Rupa Dharam Shivam Sarva Nama Dharam Satyam Satchidananda Rupa Dvaitam Satyam Shivam Sundaram. All the names are the names of Swami. All forms are forms of Sai. He is being, awareness and bliss. He is truth, oneness and beauty. Even before I attempt to get started, I wish to say that we must first understand what is this phenomenon called Bhagavan Sri Sathya Sai Baba, who has been a friend to a few, mother to most of us, a guiding father, a guru, Satguru, and Bhagwan himself. What is this phenomenon? Who is this Sathya Sai Baba, who is revered across the entire planet, who is revered by millions for several yugas, and who will continue to be revered as the cosmic consciousness? Who is this Sathya Sai Baba? I want to straight away narrate a small incident which revealed this truth to me. It was one afternoon in Prashanthi Nilayam. It seemed like any other normal afternoon. Bhagwan beautifully glided into Sai Kulwant Hall, and as he came near the veranda, he gently said, "Go in." And once I was there inside, Swami engaged in a conversation about the greatness of the land of Bharat. And suddenly he says, "Go to the window and look out. It is going to start raining." And I go to the window, and suddenly there is a lot of rain from out of the blue. Heavy showers pelting on the sacred roofs of Kulwant Hall, creating the aura of sacredness as if washing the holy feet of Sai. And then Swami said, "Now it will become very hot and sunny." Suddenly the rain stops, and then there is a bright sunshine. The sun god had come to kiss the feet of Sai. And then he says, "Now there will be a lot of wind." And he said it so naturally. And then I look out, and suddenly there is a heavy, heavy burst of wind. The force of the wind was so severe, from that window in the interview room, I could actually see the sleeves on the shirts of the students fluttering, who were sitting in the front. And then Swami very casually says, "Like this, the sun god, wind god, rain god, this god, that god, keep coming to have my darshan. But I don't allow anyone to come near me. I have given that opportunity to y'all." And instantly then, he declares, Sarvadevatatita swarupa dharinchi manavakarame ee akaramu. All the forms of divinity, known, unknown, covert, overt, conscious, every single form of divinity by any name that you call, any form that you call and address, is present in this form of Sai. This is Bhagavan Sri Satya Sai Baba. The cosmic consciousness, the absolute truth, the one without whom there is nothing else that is possible on this cosmos. This is our Swami, who suddenly comes down to the level of a human, becomes one with us, plays with us, sings with us, becomes a friend, becomes a mother, becomes a father. And yet, we keep wanting evidence and proof of divinity time and again, time and again, time and again. I have never been an exception to this. In my earlier years, when I came to Swami, I used to always have an apprehension. And this kind of a notion is probably there in a lot of us, though Bhagwan's dividend is evident. The moment you have his darshan, the moment you look at the form, you know this is not just a Sadguru. This is something beyond that. But still, there is a notion, there is a feeling, there is an apprehension, there is a doubt. There are rumors. So I also had this apprehension. And I used to have so many thoughts entertained in my mind. And Swami cleared all this in one day in Vrindavan in 1991. The samiti to which I used to go then, the convener called me in the afternoon and said, there is an air commodore who wishes to have Bhagwan's darshan, and he has actually come with a donation to hand over to Swami. So will you come with us? You need to drive the car. You know, the first thought that came to my mind, the first thought that struck me, the corrupted human mind, so to speak, this is a man who has come to hand over a donation to Swami. Now I have heard that Swami is someone who interacts with the rich and famous. So I thought, if I go with this man to Vrindavan, there is a guaranteed chance of me getting an immediate proximity to Swami. For some reason, Swami is going to call this man and talk to him and shower on him, and that is the bonanza I am getting today. So I immediately agreed to go. And all three of us go to Whitefield. And that was time when the present Sai Ramesh Hall, the Darshan Hall, if some of you have noticed it there, was not there. There was an old Sai Ram shed under a tree, and Bhagwan is to come there and give Darshan. So we were made to sit in the first row, the convener, this air commodore, and next to him, I also got a chance because I had driven them. And I was absolutely sure this is going to be my day. And even before coming there, there was another thought which I had entertained in my mind, because I had read about it. I had heard people talking about it. I had heard rumors that Bhagwan Baba actually does not materialize vibhuti out of his own will, but Bhagwan Baba has got a secret mechanism to materialize this vibhuti. So with all these thoughts, the monkey mind, as Swami would call it, we were seated there. And Swami came graciously, so beautifully, he glided into Ramesh Hall. And as he came near the Air Force Commodore, the convener got up and introduced him, and he said, Swami wants to offer a small token of his love at your lotus feet. And this man had actually carried the cash in his hand, and he was offering it. Swami touched the packet and said, your mother is not well, and you will need this money for her treatment. Rakhlo. And immediately after that, he waves his hand, and before he waves his hand to materialize vibhuti, he looks at me and puts up his sleeve. And then he pauses. And I was at the height of his palm. So instead of doing the routine circular movement, he just did this. And I actually watched the vibhuti piling up from the middle of his palm. And then he gives the entire vibhuti to the air commodore, sprinkles whatever else is left on his fingers on him, clenches his fist, keeps it back to him, looks at me and walks away. As if to say, you doubting Thomas, two doubts got cleared. Sai is not for money. Sai is the eternal protector. Sai is the mother. He is the embodiment of pure love. And that is all he is. He is not someone who needs to come and materialize objects. It happens out of his instant will. It is his sankalpa which creates all this. It is not a mechanism which creates all this. Two doubts got cleared. Then we were ushered into Bhagwan's residences, which is in Thrai, away from the public darshan hall. Once we were there, Swami was in the garden and he was distributing laddus to everybody. And Swami had his typical gracious way of doing this. So he would take a laddu from a plate and throw it, and it would perfectly go and land within the palms of the person who was supposed to get it. So he was actually giving laddu like this. And three of us were standing at a distance. And just then I saw the chief minister of the state, ushered in by a few senior devotees, also coming in from another side, and he came and stood there. And then I said, "Are, now my chance to get the laddu is probably gone." Because Swami, you know, the rich and famous, this is the mad mind which is still working. He proves it to me just a few minutes ago that he is not someone who is for the rich and famous. But again the mad mind erupts. So I am standing there and I actually put back my hands like this, because I am convinced that I will not get the laddu now. And Swami is throwing the laddus to everybody. And then automatically when you look at his form, your palms go up in namaskar. And the moment I did this, I found there was a laddu in my palm. Now I am standing at a distance. I am nowhere close to him. And there is a laddu there. This happens in 1991. I will straight away take you to 2009 now, 18 years. Swami had given us an opportunity to get 85 boys in whose houses we did a special Ekadasha Rudram chanting. And he said, "You bring all these boys to Prashanti Nilayam. I want them to chant in front of me in the Bhajan Mandir." So all these 85 boys were brought, and Swami very graciously one evening at almost 6:30 or 6:45, he permitted all of us to go into the Bhajan Mandir, and he sat through the entire Rudram chanting, guided them minutely, pointed out so many nuances in Rudram chanting, how it has to be uttered, what is the exact methodology, what is the system of commencing the mantra, what is the system of concluding the mantra, what should be the posture, what should be the bhava within. He went on guiding them. He moved amongst the boys. He took a lot of letters from the boys who had doubts on the Vedic symbols involved in Rudram. And after all this was done, once the program concluded, we had organized Obbattu. Obbattu is Puranpoli. Maharashtra's Puranpoli is Obbattu. Obbattu Prasadam was organized that day to be distributed to the entire crowd. So once the Rudram program got over, Swami said, "Distribute the Prasadam to everyone." So we got the first bowl blessed by him, and then the Prasadam was taken out and distributed to the entire crowd. And then we came back and reported to Swami sincerely, "Swami, the way you said, the Prasadam has been distributed to all the people in the crowd." And Swami said, "But I didn't get even one." And immediately he quips, this is where divinity is present. "On that day, you didn't ask, but I gave you the laddu. Today, you didn't think of me, but I'm asking you for the obattu. This is after 18 years. 1991, 2009. Sai is beyond our comprehension. Swami cannot be limited to this body. Swami cannot be limited to just this form. Swami cannot be limited to the human mind. Swami is much, much, much more and beyond all this. All that we need to do, I think, is surrender and accept the divinity as the first step. When I was in my 7th standard, my mother took me to the residence of a senior trustee of the Satya Sai Trust then, in whose house Bhagwan had graciously visited, Mr. Prasad. By the time we reached, the bhajans were over, and aarti was being offered to Swami inside the residence. So we were standing right outside the door, entrance door. Swami accepted aarti and then he was coming out. And as he came out, and my mother was very fortunate to have received his grace and blessings on quite a few occasions. So when he saw her, he immediately came near her, and she had taken me, and I had gone there most reluctantly, because I never believed that this is God. In fact, I was told at home by my grandmother that this is a magician, and don't allow his eyes to look directly into your eyes, because he'll hypnotize you. So I was actually standing behind my mother, and then my mother brings me to the front and says, "Swami, I don't know what to do with him. He's always playing only cricket, only cricket, only cricket. He doesn't study at all. You only have to take care." And instantly he materializes vibhuti, puts it on my head and rubs and tells her, "I will take care of him." This happened in the 7th standard. There was no interaction with Swami after that. Once I finished my graduation, I lost my mother quite early in life. And when she passed away, I had this anger within. The anger was, this so-called Sai Baba, Swami used to go, my mother used to go to Swami, and he used to shower so much love on her and all that, and she believed in him. Then why did he have to take her away? Why could he not have just allowed her to be for a few more years? So this anger was there. It was bubbling within. But I couldn't show it out. It was always there within me. And then in 1990, my sister, one afternoon she says, "We need to go to Whitefield. Sai Baba is there and somebody needs to be dropped there, some elderly couple. Since you have got your driving license now, you need to drive the car." So I was very excited because I had got a driving license this then and I was so happy to be driving the car. So I said, "Let us go." So we go to Whitefield. And after reaching the ashram, I told my sister, "I will not come in. You go and take these people inside, because he is the one who took away my mother. How can I come and have his darshan? He did not even have the mercy to keep her alive for a few more years." So I sat back in the car and they all went inside. And after a few minutes, I noticed in the rear seat, there was a purse of that lady who had gone in. And I thought it is my duty to take that purse and give it to her. So I take that purse and go into the ashram. And when I go into the ashram, the sevadar just come. And he just ushered me and made me sit in one place, right at the corner, where the sand was there those days. It was not within the inner circle, outside. And Swami comes, and then I am caught. I can't even get up and go out now. So I am right there. Swami comes. And what happened was, when he comes from Thrai Vrindavan, from his residence, the sand portion actually is the first area which he will encounter. Then he will go into the hall. So he has to cross that area. So I was there, and as he was nearing, I was actually clenching my fist and I said, "This is the chance. Let me get up and shout at him. Let me tell him and ask him, why did he do this to me? Why did he take away my mother?" Because anger. Anger is there. The krodha is there. Swami neared, and as he neared, I went up on my knees and I said, "My mother passed away, Swami." And he instantly says, "But I am there for you," in English. And this is the connect which he keeps on keeping. He gave a promise to her, I will take care of him. When I go and encounter him, his instant word is, I am there for you. What I am trying to bring forth here is, Sai is not someone who just comes into our life and goes out of our life as we may want to choose it. Sai is someone who, once he chooses to enter into our life, he will stay put. Whether we accept him or not, he will stay put. He has an agenda, he has a work to perform on each one of us. He has decided, it is his sankalpa that we are in his fold. It is his sankalpa that we have got attracted to this form and realized the divinity in this form. He will never let go. We may run away, but he will not let go of us, ever. In 1992, I have such fond memories of this session today in Dharmakshetra. In fact, 1992, Swami visited Mumbai, January, I think. And that year, out of the blue in the darshan, he tells me, Bombay, just before the trip to Bombay was planned. And I was wondering what it meant. I didn't know. But I assumed that when he said Bombay, it means that I am supposed to travel to Bombay. So I went and searched and asked my convener of the samiti. I said, sir, this is what Swami mentioned today, so what am I supposed to do? He said, no, Bhagwan is planning to go to Bombay. So maybe he was indicating you should also go. I will check and let you know what is the journey, the itinerary. And those days, I used to file some income tax returns for these Indian Airlines people, staff, senior staff. So once I got to know that Swami was traveling to Mumbai, I persuaded with them and they helped me get a ticket in the same row in which Swami was seated. Because I think row number 7A Swami was seated, 7B, 7C was Colonel Jogarao, 7D and then 7E I got. So that was a big push for me, because I felt, oh, this is the chance I am traveling with Swami. In the flight, Swami made me do a lot of sevadal work. A lot of people were coming to get pictures autographed, signed and all that. He said, hey, get up, crowd control, Jay. So I was actually standing and controlling people and doing this, and he taught me some beautiful lessons in that process. All this went on for some time. Then he called the crew, he took pictures with them, and he was showering love on everyone. There was a passenger who had wanted to get his daughter's Mangalyam blessed. Swami moved towards him, blessed the Mangalyam, gave him vibhuti, was giving darshan within the flight. All this happened. And then finally, when he came and settled down in his seat just before the landing, I said, Swami, where do I stay in Dharmakshetra? I have assumed that I am also going to be in Dharmakshetra with him. I have assumed. Because the ego, the ahankaram in you, assumes that just because Swami gives you a chance to travel with him, that everything else is also falling in place. So I asked him just before landing, Swami, Dharmakshetra, where am I supposed to stay? You are going to be in Dharmakshetra, where will I stay? Where is my room in Dharmakshetra? And Swami said, there is no need for you to come to Dharmakshetra. And I was wondering, what is this? I mean, I have come to Mumbai and I don't know anybody here. I had some 380 rupees with me. The ticket was courtesy Indian Airlines because of income tax returns. I didn't know what to do. I said, once we land there and then the flight lands and I see a lot of people coming in cars there to take Swami, and Swami is getting ready to leave and no indication, nothing, and I was completely lost. Suddenly it turns back and says, you go to Shirdi. Shirdi hogbittu vapas hogvaga nan jothe ba, he said. You go to Shirdi and when you are returning, you come back with me. That was my first trip in my life to Shirdi. It was a very memorable trip. I had a blissful time in Shirdi. The pain was there that I was not part of Swami's entourage which came to Dharmakshetra. But there was a blessing that maybe the some dues were there from the earlier form to me. So I had a wonderful trip. I came back, and then I was desperately trying to find out what is Swami's program to return back to Bangalore. Because he said, you come back with me. And I tried my best. I just couldn't access anybody. Because you have to understand that at a certain point in time, you simply accept the words of the divine. And you just wait. Saburi is the divine lesson. So you just wait with patience. When grace has to come, it will come. It has to come because it is chosen. It is destined that it has to be conferred on you. There is no point in our hurrying up. You may stand upside down. Nothing is going to happen any other speed other than God's speed. So by a divine turn of events, I was able to get a booking on the flight in which Bhagavan was returning. And the moment I sat down and Swami came into the aircraft and he entered and he sat down, and after they closed the cabin door, he knew exactly. I was wondering, Swami has not seen where I am seated, but he had spotted because he had willed that you have to be on that flight, and he knew exactly where you are. Sometimes we may wonder that God is not responding to my prayer. God is not responding to me visually, symbolically, but God need not respond to us because He is not outside of us. He is within us. Since He is part of us, there is no question of God having to respond. Since He knew that His Sankalpa will achieve that trip of mine back to Bangalore with Him, He knew exactly where I was seated. Suddenly He turns and He calls in the aircraft. For Swami, the aircraft is like another Dharmakshetra or Kulwant Hall or Ramesh Hall or something like that. Darshan, he calls. When I went, he says, very bad. I said, what happened, Swami? Who asked you to go first to the Samadhi Mandir? First, you should go to Dwarka Mine. And I got a jolt. I said, my God. Because I had actually gone first to the Samadhi Mandir for Darshan. And then I went to Dwarka Mine. This was my first visit to Shirdi. I didn't know the rules. I didn't know what it was to actually go there and what are you supposed to do. Later on, I read in the Satcharitra that Dwarka Mine was the place where every devotee would first come and offer his obeisances to Bhagwan there. Samadhi Mandir came only towards the end after his body was shed. So Swami immediately said, why did you go to the Samadhi Mandir? You should have gone to Dwarka Mine. This is omniscience. The Divine Lord bringing forth another example of guiding and telling you, I am not just this form that you are watching. I am the inner consciousness which is within you. I am the very thought process in you. I am you and you are me. This is the lesson he has been trying to drive home time and again, time and again, time and again. But somehow, man with all his inadequacies doesn't want to rise up. We don't want to rise up. I think that is where the question is. We don't want to. We have become stubborn. We feel, no, it's better that I am here and I keep on worshipping Swami and saying, praying to Him and actually practicing Dvaita while professing to follow Advaita. Life continued. 92 was the Shirdi trip. My brother today told me, you have to talk about Athirudram. Athirudram is a very, very touching personal experience which I think not just in this birth but in births and lifetimes I will never, never, never be able to ever get a moment as cherished as that. But after that in 93, Swami arranged my marriage. He blessed us. He got us married. And I had a grouse against Him in 93. He said, I will get you married. He blessed us in Vrindavan. He chose the bride for me. He told their parents, this is the husband for your girl. All this was done. He fixed up the date of the marriage. And that morning, all of us relatives gather and go and sit in Vrindavan, hoping Swami will actually call us and get us married in the Kalyan Mandap. And it didn't happen. And Swami comes and says, you go to the Shirdi Sai Baba temple near your house. There was a Shirdi Sai Baba temple near my house in Bangalore. He says, you go there and get married there. So I was actually angry. I said, what is this? You call us here, you call all relatives, you fix up everything, and now you straight away pass on the buck on your previous incarnation. How can this happen? So this grouse was there, but then Bhagwan is so beautiful, so loving, so enchanting, that the next darshan, everything is forgotten. I mean, that form has got that feeling. Once you look at him, you forget everything. No anger, no grouse, nothing comes. You just go back to being yourself. So that anger was there on that day. We went to the Shirdi Sai temple. We did whatever ceremonies had to be done. But I told my father, I said, I will not do that going around the fire and all those traditional things which have to be done. I will get married. Because you all have told me to get married and Swami has also guided me to get married, but I will not do all those ceremonial things. But we will get married. So he said, you at least get married. Finish that part. So we finished the ceremonial part. This is in 2006, when this yagnam started. Swami called us in and he says, oh, you are angry that I didn't get you married. And then he performs the entire marriage in the interview room. He materialized the Mangalyam for her. He did everything for me. And then he sits there and says, now you go around me. And then, to top it, he finally says, today, sweets have been distributed to all the people. Because today it is your marriage. And on that day, out of the blue, prasadam was being distributed. There was no function, nothing. Prasadam was being distributed to the entire public. Now this is what, 13 years. He will never forget. A word given, a promise made, he will never, never, never forget. We may forget. Swami, it is a stamp of divinity, divine assurance. Years rolled on, my father passed away in 97. And after he passed away, you know, a lot of maturity comes into you. The father, the mother have all passed away, the guiding forces in your life. And I was still very young. And once he passed away, I was wondering, maybe life has come to a standstill now. I don't know how to proceed. So I go to Prashanti Nilayam and I said, ultimate recourse is only to go to Bhagwan. I go there. And Swami just didn't respond. There was nothing. I mean, there was not even a recognition. There was not even a word spoken. There was not even an indication. Absolutely nothing. And then we come back to Bangalore. And then life goes on. 98, 99. In 2001, Swami had decided to grace Latur, Chakur, with his divine visit. He gave us the great opportunity of taking his huge portraits, which were placed in the sanctum sanctorum of that temple in Latur. And Mr. Uttam Rao Jadhav, who was coordinating this entire visit, said, Bhagwan has asked you to bring those big portraits to Latur. And I remember I was returning back from Parthi one afternoon, and I was running high fever, and I get a call from Vrindavan saying, you are required to urgently come to the ashram. So we drove there in spite of my fever, and Bhagwan was inside, and Sri Shivraj Patil was with Swami then, going through the arrangements for the visit. And I was waiting outside, burning with fever. And in the midst of all that conversation and planning that Swami was doing, he calls the custodian of the ashram and tells him that boy has come who has to take the photos to Latur. He is running very high fever. Give him this mango and ask him to have it tonight and get ready to go to Latur. So the custodian comes and gives me the mango. And that same night, according to Swami's will, we consumed the mango. Next morning I was fit because it was his sankalpa. We land up at Vrindavan. Swami gives minute instructions. He said, I will arrange the vehicle, everything I will do. Only one instruction is very important, he said. Both you and your wife have to carry that large portrait, keeping it on your lap. You will start from Vrindavan Ashram and only get down in the ashram in Latur. You will not stop anywhere on the way. You will not go here and there visiting anybody else after this work is done. You will come back straight to Vrindavan and report to me. So this was a clear instruction. So with that instruction, we go to Latur, we place that portrait there, we saw the bliss which was getting generated in the expectancy of Bhagwan's visit in July of 2001. And then after the program and after all that was done, we came back and Swami of course was so gracious, he was so happy that those portraits had been given. That was an immense opportunity he gave when he visited Latur in 2001, July, before he went. Through the organizers, he entrusted so many responsibilities. We were there during that visit and I have never seen this kind of fervor which was generated. Tens of thousands of people coming to get a glimpse of divinity in those parched lands was amazing. It again sparked devotion and a conviction that you are ultimately in the realms of divinity. In 2001, there was one more very interesting thing which Bhagwan did in my life. I had joined a multinational company in 2000. And these people had posted me as head of their finance operations and wanted to transfer me to New York. So they asked me to join their corporate office in New York. And the offices were in the World Trade Center, on the 52nd floor. And I take the letter and I actually wound up most of it in Bangalore and I take the letter and go to Swami in Vrindavan to just tell him that this offer has come, Swami, and I thought he'll be so happy when I tell him I'm going to America. So I'm sitting with the letter and Swami comes. He takes the letter, leaves Swami and go, and he threw that letter. And you know how it is. Once in public, Swami shouts at you like that, or he scolds you, then the whole gathering feels you are the greatest sinner on earth. So after that, Swami cuts short his darshan, turns back, accepts Arati and goes away into Thrai. And people thought I had done such a heinous crime that they lost the privilege of a darshan. So after darshan, I was looked at like a convict. And I didn't know, because I had not done anything wrong. I was wondering what is the mistake I had done. I just went to tell him that I am shifted to America and I have come to take your blessing, and this is what he did. And then, as you all know, the same year, the World Trade Center collapses. The entire staff in the 52nd floor died of that company. And I was there, left behind purely because of mercy. Infinite mercy. He will ensure to take it to any extent. He will take it to any extent to ensure that you are protected. His protective hand, his grace and his blessing is on all of us in equal measure. He will not let anybody, he may take us to the cliff. He may even allow us to dangle from the cliff, but he'll never let us down. This is the assurance of Bhagwan. He will never do it. Whatever happens in our life is for our good. I am telling you, that was the biggest break in my life. At that age, I was trying to be getting into the financial capital of the world. They put me on the board of that company. It was the biggest dream for a finance professional. It was a billion-dollar entity. I was supposed to be there right in the thick of things. And Swami says, you don't have to go, and everything just shattered. But when you look back, what had he done? With his mother's love, only his love, nothing else. In 2006, I continued to work in that company. 2006, just before, I think it was October of 2006, after the yagna got over, Swami says, what work are you doing? I said, Swami, I work for this company. leave the job. They had actually promoted me to the board. And I was taken onto the board of a company in a very senior capacity. Swami says, leave the job. And I said, Swami, but they will not leave me like that. I have to give 6 months notice. You know, you're trying to argue because you're still attached to your worldly roots. Swami said, you go back and send them a mail, they will accept it. Letter bury, they will accept it very casually. So I go back to Bangalore, I send a mail, letter and all that. And within 3-4 days, I get a reply mail saying, we have accepted it, you have to continue for 1 year as a consultant. So I was actually crestfallen because you lost something so great. I mean, the greatest opportunity in a materialistic sense. And I go back to Prashanthi Nilayam, and I think it was the ladies' day, November 19th, and Swami was distributing saris to everybody. And then he comes to the veranda. I have kept one sari for you also. I said, Swami, because now you have no work, you have to be at home. So I have kept one sari for you also. I mean, this is like, you know, rubbing it in. You create the wound and then you rub it in. But then it is Bhagwan. I had enough evidence by then, whatever he does is only for our good and only for our good, nothing else. After that he says, you are a CA. I said, yes, Swami. Small office itko practice model. He actually said, small office. You do my work from now, he said. So it started from there, and he gave so many opportunities in his infinite mercy and grace to work as a small instrument at his lotus feet from then till now. And I pray to him that it continues till the last drop of blood and the last breath in this body, because whatever is happening with this body in this birth is entirely due to his mercy, his grace, and his love. In 2006 came the year of Atirudram. Atirudram was not in any way initiated or done by anyone else, certainly not by me. Atirudram was a prasadam. It was a divine boon conferred by Bhagwan on humanity. I remember there was a Yuvavandana youth festival which we conducted in the month of May in Vrindavan. At the end of that youth festival, on the last day, Swami permitted me to bring all the youth coordinators into Thrai Vrindavan near his residence. And he said, I will talk to all of them tomorrow in the morning. You bring them all. So all the district youth coordinators, I took them all to behind where Swami's residence was. And he blessed them all profusely and all that happened. And finally, he suddenly looks at me and says, we have got to do some work in Puttaparthi. You come there next week. I was taken aback. I didn't know what is the work. What is it that he's hinting? And he said it so directly and clearly, and it was in the midst of all these boys surrounding him, looked directly and said, we have got namgeno kelsa ide, Prashanthi Nilayamge next week ba. So Swami left for Parthi on a particular Saturday, and I thought when Swami is leaving, I'll also follow. Because when he said, come to Parthi, why delay? So immediately go. So he also followed his car, and Swami stopped en route to Parthi in a place called Bagepalli. And I went there, Swami went into that temple in Bagepalli, and when he came out, I was at a distance. Swami used to call me Vinaya, not Vinay. So he said, hey Vinaya. Then he said, our work should be only on Somavara, not today. Somavara Puttaparthikba, he said. So I again didn't understand. But there was a prayer before this. This is what I want to share with all of you. What was the background for Atirudram? My wife and I had decided that we would conduct a complete reading of the Shiva Puran at home, following the entire dictum written in the Shiva Puran, as it were, the strict adherence to whatever was mentioned in the methodology for reading that Shiva Puran. So for 18 days it took us 18 days to read this Puranam every day for 9 hours. We would get up at 2 in the morning and start the whole thing exactly the way it was written in the Puran. We sat in our puja room. We bought 2 sets of the Shiva Puran in English. And the day we started reading, Amrit started flowing from Bhagwan's picture in the puja room. And on the last day when we completed the reading, the Amrit got formed in the form of an Om. And in the Shiva Puran, there is a khanda, a part which is called Sati Khanda. And in that Sati Khanda, there is an entire description of the annihilation of Daksha Prajapati's Yajna, where Daksha conducted this Yajna and Lord Shiva was insulted and Mother Sati had to forego and give up her life. And that angered Shiva and he became the Rudra and he annihilated the entire Yajna. And when we were reading this Puranam, time and again in the Puranam, I only got one thought. Shiva is not someone who should be associated with anger. Shiva is an extremely loving form of divinity. I really didn't understand why the word Rudra was even associated with Shiva. I said, when he was so compassionate and so loving, how can the word Rudra, because the word Rudra itself means something anger, some kind of a forceful objective to a personality. I was wondering, why was he even being addressed as Rudra? And then a thought came, why not look at conducting a yajna or a puja in front of our own Sai Shiva, which will give him so much of joy and happiness? Because when Daksha conducted that yajna, Shiva was so angry, but he cannot be angry. So I looked up into the texts and I consulted some very senior Vedic scholars, and then someone told me that Atirudra Mahayagnam is the highest form of worship to Lord Shiva. So I said, suppose we are able to offer this and Bhagwan is able to accept it, then that will give us and whole of humanity so much of joy to see Lord Shiva in that happy, blissful state. So with this objective, we wrote down the whole program, the synopsis of what is Atirudram and all that. And on that Somavara, which he asked me to come, I carried this thing with me to Prashanti Nilayam. And I was seated there. On Somavara, Swami didn't call and talk to me. But on Somavara, he gave lot of beautiful darshan, eye-to-eye contact, smile, all that happened. But no chance of being called. So I wondered, I said, my God, what is happening? I brought this, he said Somavara, he should have called me anyway. The next day, he comes in the morning, Tuesday morning. He says, Nenne Someshwaran darshana aitu. Ivattu bhashana agate. Yesterday was Shiva's darshan. Today is Shiva's bhashan. And it didn't strike me. He said it standing in the veranda. He was at the entrance and I was 6th or 7th sitting in the upper veranda. From there he calls out and he says this. And then he says, now you go in. And once I went in, he said, Yen samacharam. Then typically, you know, you want to get up and show your prowess. So I removed that envelope, removed the sheet from that. And I wanted to place in front of Bhagwan the program which we were offering, which we thought we have designed, we have conceived, we have thought about. So I brought up that sheet and wanted to show it to him. He just brushed it aside like this. He didn't even look at it. Just put his hand and he went into deep contemplation. And then he opens his eyes for a few seconds. He says, Atirudra Mahayagnam Madu. He says, this is the highest form of worship. I will have lot of anandam. I will get this yagnam done. the time has come for this yagnam to be performed. This was the declaration. We never proposed and gave a sheet to tell Swami that there is an Atirudra Mahayagnam which needs to be conducted. It was in His divine plan. It was part of His sankalpa. It was His will. We are nowhere in the picture. Nowhere. In fact, after that, on many occasions, Swami would introduce me to people and say, He did Atirudra Mahayagnam. I said, Swami, please, because we know that we were not instrumental. In fact, the whole yagnam happened in spite of us, not because of us. He got into minute detailing. He got into minute planning. And this yagnam taught me three facets of Bhagwan. The first facet was His penchant for perfection, His detailing, His detailed involvement, how He would plan things. And that was an amazing lesson for so many of us leaders in the youth group and elsewhere on how you should conceive and plan a certain event and project. Everything was done by Him from scratch to end. The second facet of Bhagwan which I learned in this Atirudram was His infinite compassion, His love, His motherly love, which was completely blossoming and coming forth every moment. And the third, I experienced divinity in its entirety. He had to show it off in its supreme form. These are the three facets of Bhagwan which I experienced during this yagnam. There were so many incidents. I don't think I will be in a position to narrate even a minuscule of all these, but I will attempt to at least bring out the most relevant ones. Right from the beginning, He blessed it on that morning. He said, after He said, this time has come for the yagnam. Then He said, you get the head priest after 6 weeks. I was in touch with the head priest because I had consulted him on the highest form of worship, so I only knew him. Before that, I had never done any program, any puja, any event with him. I went back to Bangalore and said, Sir, Swami is calling you and we are supposed to be there on 19th of June 2006. On 19th June, in the morning, the head priest comes. Now, Swami starts getting involved in the whole yagnam. The first step, selection of the head priest. He calls the priest. The priest was in the darshan line. I got up and said, Swami, head priest has come. He said, go out and bring him. So when I go out, this gentleman starts walking and coming towards the veranda. Swami took a few steps and came down in the veranda. And from a distance, as this head priest was walking and coming, Swami says, oh, Ivra, he, I know him, I know his father, I know his grandfather, they are all worshipping me in my temple only. He is fit to do this yagnam. Selected-o, he said. He selects the head priest. Then he called him in. And that was a fascinating discussion, which I will reveal to you when I talk to you about the divinity of Bhagwan. After that, the next thing which he did was, he calls me in one day, and then he calls all the principal trustees and the senior office bearers of the Satya Sai setup, the university vice chancellor, the other senior members who are seated right outside in the veranda. He calls them all in, and then he asks them, he wants to do one yagnam. Every time he wants to do, because he dealings himself from it. He wants to do one yagnam. He's saying we will do it in Kulwant Hall. I have not said it. This is Bhagwan. He wants to do it in Kulwant Hall. Em cheyali? He's asking. He's asking them. Each of them is a very great scholar, deeply devoted to Swami. They all gave their inputs. And many of them suggested different ways in which it should be done, at different locations in which it could be done. And after it was all completed, and they all left the room, I said, Swami, because you never know what Swami is up to. He can change things at any time, for any reason. I said, Swami, so what have you decided about the yagnam? He says, you should always involve the elders. You must take them into confidence. You must call them and consult them and tell them what is happening. You must not do things directly. That is why I called them. You do the yagnam in Kulwant Hall. My blessings are there. Lesson in perfection. Selected the priest, consult the elders, work with the elders, work in unity. Next step. He's at it continuously. We didn't do any planning. You can't even think. There's no human comprehension in all this. Every stage was so meticulously done. Then this session happened, which you saw. Suddenly he says one morning, you are going to get priests, but do they know to chant the Rudram? I said, Swami, now we are getting priests who we feel are proficient in chanting the Rudram. He says, you get a few of them. I want to hear them. If they chant properly, I will allow this yagnam to happen. So what we did, we got 40-50 of these priests who were most proficient. And I took a list of all the 137 priests. And in the top, these 40 priests were there. Swami said, get the whole list and get me the list of priests you are bringing. So I took the list of 137 and I took this list of 40 whom we are going to get for that sample chanting and placed both in front of Swami. And Swami said, oh, these are experts in chanting, 40. I said, yes, Swami. You're better. He says, don't bring them. Who doesn't know to chant Rudram in this list? So I said, Swami, I don't know, because this 40 is mixed in that. From the bottom you start the 40. So from the bottom 40, he said, those 40 you bring. Now I knew those are the 40 who are not so proficient in chanting. But Swami wanted those whom we felt were least proficient to chant in front of him, and if their quality came out very well, then the overall quality will be wonderful. That is that lot, few of them, who came into the Bhajan Mandir, and Swami asked them to chant. I don't know if it was this scene. This happened, I think, in the morning of 2006. That happened a little earlier. 2006, August 9. That happened a little earlier. So they were all seated in the Mandir, and Swami brought out 3 points that morning, which was, you know, the only divinity can think and guide you like this. He was keenly observing the chanting. And before this chanting happened, I want to tell you one more thing. What I had done in all my cleverness, I had got this whole chanting done in Bangalore earlier, recorded the whole thing on one small tape recorder, and I took that thing to Parthi, and in the interview room, I told Swami, Swami, they chant fantastically, very nice, because I had to create the hype, because I wanted the yagnam to happen. I said, Swami, they're chanting beautifully, you please listen to this. Swami, instead of paying attention to listening to the Rudram chanting, he was more enamored with that equipment, and he started playing with it like a toy. He was pressing this button, pressing that button, and that thing was opening up suddenly. He said, "Hi, how is it opening?" I said, "Swami, the Rudram chanting." And that thing he's putting with his left hand down. So he completely trivialized the whole objective of taking that recording. And he said, anyway, they are coming. No, I will hear them. So the heart was beating faster. That morning came, we all sat there. And Swami keenly observed, heard the entire first and second Anuvakam chanted. Then he asked them to stop. He pointed out 3 things. First, he said, posture is not okay for all of them. They have to be straight. If you are not straight when you are chanting the Rudram, he says the energy level will get mixed inside the body. It can create negative impact on the person. You have to be straight when you are chanting, first. Second, eyes should not move, he said. I was shocked. He said, they should not even flutter their eyes and move like this. The bhava should be that they are actually watching inward, whereas their eyes are open and looking as if they are looking at something outward. The attention should be on the inward consciousness, not on the outward world. You should become inner focused, not outward bound. Though you are sitting and chanting the Rudra Mantra, because he said the energy generated by the mantra is so powerful that when you are focusing on yourself, the realization of the Supreme Consciousness within gets hastened. He said all the priests are sitting and chanting like how it is done for a show. So they have to chant the correct. The third thing, of course, Swami said, when you chant in a group, said it should come out as one voice. It should not sound Om Namo Bhagavate, Om Namo Bhagavate, Om Namo Bhagavate, 3-4 people chanting and somebody from there, somebody from here, somebody from there. It should be one voice. It should be one sound which should be heard. And he was keenly observing this. Then he called the priests, guided them, told them how it should be done. So lovingly, so much of patience, minutely he guided them. This is how he got the priests involved in the correct methodology of chanting the Rudram. Bhava. It was Ashadi Ekadashi celebrations in Prashanti Nilayam, 2006. I think the artist was Richa Sharma was performing. Swami witnessed the entire program. He was so happy with the artist. He, I think, materialized something for her and took pictures and all that. Aarti was accepted. After Aarti was accepted and Swami had to retire back, before that, he calls me inside. This is after Aarti. It's probably nearing 6:40, 6:45 in the evening. And when I went in, Swami said, how did you like the program? So I said, see, when Swami has showered on the artist and created a chain and all that, you have to be at your diplomatic best. So I said, Swami, the program was wonderful. Yen hadidru Swami, ishtu chanagittu Swami. You go on. Swami said, I don't mean any offense to the artist, obviously, because those words came from divinity himself. Swami said, when you sing, there should be bhava. Bhava tumba mukhya, he said. Ragam, talam can be there, but bhava is very important. And Swami sang Payoji Mene that evening. And when I was listening to him singing, as he was singing that bhajan, Mirabai manifested in his hand, a beautiful figurette of Mirabai. And Swami said, Mirabai Bandlo. And he showed. And he said, the love with which she sang for me in that yuga, I remembered her today and she has again appeared. This is what bhava can do to God. This is what the purest feeling from within can do to the Lord. You can attract Him only with purity from within. Bhava. So Swami said, this entire yagnam, all the preparations, everything should be done with the purest bhava. And the bhava should be of that metal which Mirabai had for me. So to explain that concept of purity with which the whole yagna should be offered, he created this whole incident to just drive home that one point. Rudram. How should the Vedic mantram Rudram be chanted? He heard the boys, he heard the priests. We got those 60 priests separately in the mandir. All this happened. One afternoon Swami came. He called one of the priests and he called me, took us in, and he told that priest, chant the Rudram. So he started chanting. And Swami in between kept on asking him to pause, and he said, it has to be like this, it has to be like this, it has to be like this. He went on correcting him. And then Swami said, Nanu Rudram Helboda? He asked him, shall I chant the Rudram? It was the greatest privilege to watch Lord Shiva chanting the Rudram, extolling himself. Swami chanted the first Tanvaka fully. Those were days, dear brothers and sisters, when the outside world felt that Swami was weak, he was not able to talk forcefully. Swami was on a wheelchair. I witnessed it that afternoon. Swami chanted the entire first Anvaka without even pausing for a breath. The last part of the first Anvaka is not so easy. You have to pause. And Swami said, when you become the Rudra becomes you, and he starts chanting, you stop chanting. You have to identify yourself with the Lord when you are offering the prayers to him. If you feel the Lord and you are separate, then your effort is determined by your praptam. You have to become the Lord and then offer the prayer to yourself. Such a great truth. And for this, he purposely did it in front of that priest, so that that priest takes the message out. And then that whole group which was there, they chanted it phenomenally. Because they said, sir, what is this? We are chanting till now thinking that there is an object called Lingam, there is an object called Shiva, there is something which is outside of us and we are worshipping that object. When we start feeling that we are that object and worship it, the whole methodology and the bhava with which you do it is different. This was another lesson. Food arrangements during the yagnam. He had arranged specially food to be provided for all the priests in a separate place. Cooks were arranged. All the arrangements were done by Bhagwan. And Swami said, what you have to do, morning, afternoon, evening, 3 times in the day, you should go to the kitchen, which was set up by the priests. You should check up what are the provisions they are using in the morning, what is the menu of the morning. What provisions have been consumed for the afternoon? What was the menu for the afternoon? What provisions consumed for the evening? What was the menu for the evening? And when the priests come and sit for lunch or dinner or breakfast, they should not be made to wait. They should be served promptly. Food is God. God is food. Don't waste food. He said, put up the board everywhere. And so every day religiously, I would go in the morning, afternoon, evening, and we try to do our best at a human level. Though we are supposed to realize that he is doing it, and then that divine energy percolates through us in that activity, but the human brain restricts itself, not knowing who it is. The question has to be asked, who am I? We don't ask that. When we don't ask that, we become weak. We become human. Once we understand who we are, then the divine energy springs forth. So we were doing this activity, routine manner, and one afternoon, the priests were all seated, and they all had their lunch, got up and went. That afternoon, Swami comes, and then he says, food ella arrangements chennagi aagta idya. The moment Swami asks you a question like that, you know something has gone wrong. Because, you know, he will ask it in a certain way, and his way of asking will be so beautiful actually, but you know somewhere you have made a mistake. So I said, Swami, to the extent we know, it has all been going on properly. Then Swami said, no, today in the afternoon, I was there. He says, one priest was waiting for rice to be served. He went on waiting, his leaf was empty, and all of you are walking up and down, up and down, up and down, like lords, and nobody bothered to even look at his leaf and give him the rice immediately. I had to immediately keep the rice vessel near him, and he was able to get the rice. And you know who that priest is? He is the head priest of the Chamundi temple in Mysore. If he goes and tells Chamundeshwari, what will happen to you? Instantly I said, Swami, but when we are with Saishwari, why should we worry? This is the detailing. Nothing escapes his attention. He is present here. He is the eternal witness to every talk. He is the eternal witness to every congregation, every bhajan, every Vedic session, everything that happens around the world. Nothing can be done without Bhagwan knowing about it, because he is us. He is not something which is external, which needs to come and prove that he is present. He is in us and we are him. And it is as simple as that. One more instance. Swami decided suddenly one day to distribute watches to all the priests during the yagna. So I was called home, and in Yajur Mandir Swami says, Swami wants to give a gift to all the priests. So he showed me the box, beautiful watches were there. When can we give these watches, he asked. So I said, Swami, whenever you will it, we'll make arrangements. This conversation was around 12:30 in the afternoon. He said, and he retired. Then he sent message that we'll do it after 1 or 2 days. So I also got ready accordingly. I told our coordinators, I said, Swami is likely to do this watch distribution. Let us keep a list ready and all, who knows when he will ask. So they kept the list ready. That afternoon he comes in the car and he gets down in the veranda and he signals for some boxes to be removed. The yagnam has to start in the afternoon. And Swami says, table ella ready agitko. He was wondering which table. I am distributing watches now. I got a shock. I said, Swami, we have not made any arrangements. I didn't know anything. And Swami asked, how many priests are there? I said, Swami, 137. Because 137 priests are supposed to be there. Swami says, 137 idara. I said, yes, Swami. Sure? I said, yes, Swami. 137 idara. Again he asked. I said, Swami, 137 idare. But I was now not sure. Then the watches come out. Quickly the table is set. Swami goes into the interview room. He comes out. And he says, all 137 priests are sitting there? I said, yes, Swami. Then I told Swami, we'll take the box, Swami. You bless it. And we'll go and distribute it to all the priests. I thought that was an easy way of escaping out of the fact that suppose 137 guys are actually not there. You know, then you'll have to get showered with Rudram. So, I said, Swami, we'll take the box and we will go and distribute it. Beda, beda, beda. Michaeli, one name you announce. Madu. Each name you announce, they will come and I will give it to them. Then my heart sank. I said, boss, now if 137 guys don't show up here, you're finished. Because it is not that you're scared of Bhagwan. That is the level of perfection. That is the minute detailing to which he gets into. He was having a lesson in mind to teach, which I'll tell you what he did at the end of this. And then on that day in the afternoon, luckily that brother had kept that list ready, and that chap, what he did, in that list, he had highlighted a few in red and some in green and all that he had done and given me. And Swami is seated there and he gives me the list and I open it and see all these red and green lines on it. And I don't know what it means. Does it mean those red lines are not there or the green lines are there? And Swami says, So I started reading. And each time I'm reading, I'm hoping, I was never so desperate to see that priest getting up. So when I say Raghava Shastri, somebody gets up from somewhere, I said, oh, thank you, Swami. Padmanabha Swami, somebody gets up and comes, I say, thank you, Swami. And Swami, after the 14th or 15th or 20th is over, inna yeshti dare. How many more? So at some stage, what I thought, I'll become a little more smarter. So I started reading off the names in quick succession. Raghava Shastri, Gopal Sharma, Manjana Sharma, like that. So that I thought, 1, 2, 3, they will keep getting up. In that process, somebody who is not there will be overlooked. Swami straight away says, slow. And then, finally, I found 133 were there. 4 were not there. And when the 126th or 27th was being given by Swami, Swami is, while giving that watch to that priest, he says, Nalak watch tegidittibidu olage. Four watches you remove and keep it inside. I didn't realize. Later on, when the whole list is over, 133 only are there. Four was extra. He said, remove those four and keep it extra. Then Swami gave his lesson. I thought I'm going to be blasted. Swami will get upset. He will get up and walk out. So I went and said, Swami, tappaitu kshamisbidi. I thought it was 137, but only 133 are there. Tappaitu Swami. I went on. Swami immediately, this is such a compassionate Lord. He will melt. Nothing can melt him more than the cry of a devotee. Swami said, what you should have done, when they leave the shed, you should take a count there. When they enter the hall, you must take a count again. 137 priests left the shed. Four of them did not enter the hall. Those four are in the shed now. You give these watches to them. They are not sitting in this crowd. You should have taken a count there and you should have taken a count here. This is a lesson. This is a lesson in perfection, detailing. Like this, to what extent, which avatar in which yuga had gone into this kind of detailing? This never happened. This is a small incident of a certain event which happened in those 85 glorious years of his physical presence. Umpteen number of events like this have happened. I'm sure millions of instructions like this has been given by him. He has got into detailing to this extent and to far greater extents in so many other cases, only to drive home one point. God is for you, with you, in you, around you, behind you, above you, and every time in you. I really am extremely grateful once again, and from the bottom and innermost recesses of my heart, I thank Swami. How do you thank him? When I said thank you, Swami, once he said, Taige thanksa, he said. You will say thanks to your mother. How do you thank him? What do you do with this God? You can't thank him, you can't shout at him, you can't ignore him. Nothing you can do. You have to live with him. You have to live with this phenomenon called Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Sai Ram.
Shivaya, Brahma Vishnu Sura Chitaya. Oh, no. Shiva, Namah Shivaya.